Today's shiur is Masechet Bava Basra, Daf Kuf Ches. We will begin Be'ezer Hashem on Daf Kuf Ches Amar Aleph at the Mishnah, the new Perek. We begin now discussing a subject that we haven't discussed previously in great detail in this Masechet. But now the Gemara and the Mishnayos will begin discussing this subject at great length. And that is the subject of Yerusha, of inheritance, which, as we will learn in the Mishnayos and the Gemara, the Torah is very specific in setting forth an order of succession of who is the first to inherit someone who passes away, and who goes next in the line of succession, and so on. As the Paiskim are very clear, this issue of the order of succession is a halacha from the Torah that must be followed unless there is a halachic will, a halachically accepted means not to follow this law of succession, which we will, Amit Hashem, also discuss as we get deeper into our sugyas. No dina de machusa, no secular law, no minig hamakoim, nobody could claim that there's a minig to follow a different order of succession, could override these dinim that the Torah has so clearly taught us. And in Mitzvah Shem, we will learn the exact line of succession. It's interesting to note that the Rambam, when he speaks about the halacha of Yerusha, he mentions it as being one of the mitzvahs asay of the Torah. And the Mefarshim are all try to understand what does the Rambam mean by saying that the mitzvahs asay, that Yerusha is a mitzvah asay. Some explain when the Rambam calls something a mitzvah asay, he doesn't only refer to situations, to mitzvahs that one must fulfill. He has to put on tzitzis, he has to put on tefillin. Rather, anything that falls under the category that the Torah tells us, the rules, is considered, according to the Rambam, a mitzvah. And here too, there are rules that the Torah sets forth if someone passes away, and that's why the Rambam calls it a mitzvah saseh. Another pshat that the Mefarshim attempt in explaining the Rambam, in explaining the opinion of the Rambam, is that the Rambam is speaking to Beis Din, that it's Beis Din's responsibility to make sure that the line of succession, the Hilchos Yerusha that we're going to learn, are followed. However, perhaps there's another way of understanding the Rambam, which is reflected by a Machlokes Rishonim at the beginning of our Perek, which speaks to the very basic concept of Yerusha. The Rishonim debate what happens when someone passes away and he leaves over an estate, and that the estate is given to the Yorshim. Who is actually the one that's giving that estate to the Yorshim? Some Rishonim suggest that as the Torah is teaching us, that even though this person has unfortunately physically passed away, he still survives and he still has the power to be Meirish, to give over to his Yorshim, what the Torah says is his Yerusha. Others, however, say that it's not the person who passed away who's giving to the Yorshim their inheritance. Rather, it's the Torah who, so to speak, assumes ownership of this inheritance, of this estate, and gives it over to the Yorshim that the Torah identified. And actually, in reviewing this Machlokes Rishonim, it could have relevance to a very interesting shaila lahalach lamaisa. There was a situation where a father passed away, and the father was the chairman, was the head of a charity foundation, which, although the money did not belong to the father, it belonged to the fund. There was a tremendous amount of money being given, being distributed to tzedakas. And the question is that position inherited by the son? If we learn, perhaps, that Hilchos Yerusha means that the father continues to live and the son is an extension of the father, so just like the father had the position that he headed this charity foundation, that should go over to his Yerush. However, if we suggest that what Hilchos Yerusha means is that the Torah delineates Hilchos Yerusha, perhaps the Torah only delineates Hilchos Yerusha as far as money or assets that the father left over, not as far as positions. But if we now understand this machlokes rishonim, perhaps now we could understand what the Rambam means when the Rambam calls Hilchos Yerusha mitzvah sasei. Because what the Rambam perhaps is trying to teach us is that Yerusha is a din that the Torah, as we just said, the opinion of some rishonim, is the one that assumes ownership of the estate and now gives it out, gives it to the various yarshim, and that's why it's called the mitzvah sasei. So teaches us the Mishnah, yesh noichlem umachilim. There are people who inherit property from others, umanchilim, and when they pass away, they are the people who are the ones that their Yerusha is taken. Meaning, what the Mishnah is now identifying is the simplest situation, is that people who are both Yarshim and Merishim of each other, that I Yarshin from this person, and this person Yarshins from me. The Rishonim say, why does the Mishnah use this sort of complicated wording of Yesh Noichlim and Manchilim? The Mishnah should have used perhaps the words Yesh Noichlim Zeh Zeh. So one pshat that I saw is because this is the wording that will fit for the other cases mentioned in the Mishnah, Noichlim v'lai Manchilim, Manchilim v'lai Noichlim, and therefore the Mishnah wanted to be consistent. Another pshat is because, as we're going to learn, at least it's the opinion of some Tanoim, that a father can choose that one of his sons over the others should be his Yerush. That's why the Mishnah teaches us the words Yesh Noichlim Umanchilim. Yesh Noichlim V'loi Manchilim. There are those that inherit but do not bequeath to others. There's the opposite situation, Umanchilim V'loi Noichlim. There are those who bequeath to their Yerusha is taken by these individuals, but they don't inherit those individuals. And then there are people that loy noichlim v'loy manchilim that are not yorshim nor moirishim. And now the Mishnah, as Taisa says, when the Mishnah begins with a list of different situations, sometimes when the Mishnah goes on to explain that list, sometimes the Mishnah begins from the beginning of the list, and sometimes the Mishnah picks up where it left off. Our Mishnah is an example where the Mishnah goes back to the beginning of the list, and our Mishnah now goes to explain what is the situation, what is the case of Yesh Noichlim Umanchilim. It says the Mishnah Ve'ein Lo Noichlim Umanchilim, what is the situation with somebody both inherits and bequeaths? Ha'av Asabonim. That means if a father to his sons, that means if somebody passes away, his father, and he has no children, his father will be his Yerush, his father will inherit him. And certainly, say to Rishonim, if the halacha is if a son, Rachman Tzlan, dies without children, that the father yarshins him. Certainly, if one's daughter passes away without children, the father is her Yerush, because the father's rights in a daughter, explained the Rishonim, are so much greater than a father's rights in his son. A father's right when a daughter is a ketana to marry her off, to sell her as a shivcha. So if a father has the din is, as we're going to learn at great length in our Gemara, that if a son dies without children, his father is his Yairish. Certainly if a daughter passes away without Yorshim, her father is her Yairish. And the halach is that a son Yashins from a father, habonimus of the sons Yashin from their father. For Achim and Av, brothers born from a common father, the halacha is that they yashin from their brother. All of these are situation of noichlim umanchilim that the Mishnah began with. Vabonim is Av, the Rishonim, Tosfos points out, why did the Mishnah have to repeat Habonim is Av? If we already mentioned Avas Habonim, obviously isn't that included? That there's no need to mention Habonim is Av. So Tosfos answers, the reason the Mishnah repeated the halacha of Habonim is Av is to teach us that even though at times daughters inherit their father's estate, when is that? Only if the father left no sons. But if the father had a son, then the halacha is that the son's yarshin and not the daughters, and that's why the Mishnah taught us the din of Abonimus Av, to teach us that the sons come before the daughters, and that the daughters don't yashin when there is a son. The Mishnah then went on to say, Ho Achim and Av, that first comes the son, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, then if there are no sons, the daughters yashin, if there are no daughters, then the father yashins, and if the father is no longer alive, then the deceased brothers yarshin him. But there's a very fundamental machloikis rishonim, a very fundamental question which will keep on emerging as we learn our sugyas. And that is, when we speak about someone's brothers yarshining him, you know, just to get the case clear, Reuven was the son of Yaakov. Reuven passed away, rachmana litzlan, without any children. And Yaakov, his father, is also no longer alive. So the halach is that Reuven's brothers, Shimon and Levi, are his Yarshim. However, debate the Rishonim, how do we understand the Yerusha of Shimon of Levi, their Yerusha of Reuven's estate? Do we understand it that really the estate is going to Yaakov, but since Yaakov is no longer alive, Shimon and Levi, who are his Yarshim, now Yarshin that estate? Or do we say that since Reuven had no children, and he no longer has a father anyway, that's why the Yerusha goes from Reuven directly to his brothers? One of the Rayas, and again, there are going to be Rayas back and forth, one of the Rayas that it goes direct is that our Mishnah does not mention another situation, and that is back to the situation of Reuven. Let's say Reuven had no children, had no father, had no brothers, but his father has brothers, means those are his paternal uncles. The halach is they are next in the line of succession, and the question is, why doesn't our Mishnah mention them? The answer, suggests some Rishonim, is because certainly one's paternal uncles who are yashning him mikoyach, out of the power of his father. And just to clarify a terminology, if somebody is a Yairish, not because he himself is a true Yairish, but he's a Yairish because he's just taking over the position of someone else, that term is called mishmush. And certainly, if one's paternal uncles are yashining him, that is certainly a case of mishmash. Suggest the Rishonim that our Mishnah is not mentioning anybody whose power of Yerusha is because of mishmash. And that's why our Mishnah doesn't mention Achi or Av, but it does mention Achim and Av, because Achim and Av are independent Yorshim, and our Mishnah mentions all independent Yorshim. There are other rayas to the other way. The fact that our Mishnah mentions Bnei Achoyos is a raya that our Mishnah does mention Mishmash, and I said we're going to learn rayas in the Mishnayas and the Gemara to both approaches. But before we try to answer this question, the Mefarshim try to understand what is the nafkamina lahalocha. If somebody passes away, he has no children, he has no father, and his brother yashins him, what's the difference if his Yerusha is because of direct, or it's because of mishmash? So some Rishonim give the simple nafkamina. We've discussed as recently as the previous year, if someone passes away, and he was about chayv, so if he left over karka, if he left over real estate, his Baal Chayv could connect that real estate from his Yarshim. If he left over, however, only Metatlin, there is no Shibra Metatlin, and his Baal Chayv cannot collect those Metatlin. Now, what would happen? Yaakov was a Baal Chayv. Yaakov owed money to someone. But when Yaakov passed away, he had no karka, he only had metaltlin. So his yarshim don't have to pay that debt. Now, Reuven passes away. And Reuven left over different items. Reuven left over karka. So if we say that Yaakov is the Yoirish of Reuven, and Shimon and Levi only come from Yaakov, so now Yaakov's Baal Chayv could collect what Reuven left as a Yerusha, because it really belongs to Yaakov, and Yaakov owes that money still, even though he's unfortunately no longer alive. If, however, we say it goes directly from Reuven to his brothers are not obligated to pay their father Yaakov's debt, and therefore they would not be obligated to pay. The person that Yaakov owed money to would have no recourse. Another nafkamina that the Maram Shif suggests is, let's say your father sold this assets from Reuven's estate before Reuven passed away, and perhaps Reuven was very sick, and then Yaakov ends up dying before Reuven. So if we say that Yaakov is the Yoirish of Reuven, that sale is a valid sale. If, however, we say that since Yaakov died before Reuven, Yaakov is never the Yoirish of Reuven, rather it's Reuven's brothers who yashiv from him directly, then the halacha will be that the Yerusha will go, that the sale will be void. Another nafkamina is, as we alluded to earlier, is that a father halachically could choose that all of his estate should go to one of his sons. So what will be the halacha if Yaakov said that he wants all of his estate to go to his son Shimon, and now Reuven died without children, and Yaakov was already dead? If we say that Yaakov is the Yoirish, so all of the directives that Yaakov gave regarding his estate will also apply to the estate of Reuven, and therefore Shimon will be the sole Yoirish of Reuven's estate. If, however, we say that Reuven's brothers are his direct Yorshim, so then it has nothing to do with Yaakov's estate, and his directives would not be relevant. And that's why this question of mishmash becomes more and more relevant as we get deeper into the sugyas. Continues the Mishnah, Heishes Imai, a man yashins from his mother. And the Mefarshim point out that why does the Mishnah use this cold language, Heishes Imai, that a person yashins his mother? Shouldn't the Mishnah use the words Haben Es Imai? Son yashins from his mother? Explained the Mefarshim that the Mishnah here has come to teach us a concept, which is a concept that we'll also discuss more as we get into the Perek. That's as follows. When a son inherits his mother's estate, what happens is it causes that estate should go from one shevet. Typically, it causes that estate should go from one shevet to another shevet. Let's explain. Let's say there was a woman who was from Shevet Yehuda. This woman married a husband from Shevet Yisachar, and therefore her husband and her sons are all considered from Shevet Yisachar. This woman whose father is from Shevet Yehuda, now his father passes away, and she was the father's Yayush. Now when she passes away, her children, who as we just identified them being members of Shevet Yisachar, will be her Yarshim. And what will happen now will be that property that was originally by Shevet Yehuda will now end up in the hands of Shevet Yisachar, which means Havaris Nachla. That is something that's considered that it's moving away, and that's what the Mishnah means by teaching us Ho'ish Esimai. Vishes Ishtai, a man inherits his wife, or Bnei Achoyos. And the number Pshotim, and understanding Bnei Achoyos, the Rambam speaks about Bnei Achoyos at great length. First, he says that what does Bnei Achoyos seem to mean? It means that a man will inherit the possessions of his mother's sister. That if his mother's sister passes away, and his mother is no longer alive, he will be the Yorush. However, the Rashbam rejects that pshat because he says that this is contrary to what our Mishnah is going to teach us, that Mishpacha Sa'im ain't a Kruya Mishpacha, and therefore maternal nephews do not Yashin from their maternal aunt. And therefore the Rashbam says that what the Mishnah means here in the case of Bnei Achoyos, we should change the word not to read Bnei Achoyos, but rather to read Bnei Achoyos. And what it's referring to as a situation is that if a man died and he doesn't have any father, children, brother, or any other descendants, his estate falls to his sister. If that sister is also no longer alive, then the estate goes to his sister's child. So now what's happening is the child is inheriting the possessions of his maternal uncle. So even though he is the Yorish of his maternal uncle, his maternal uncle will never be his Yorish. And that's what the Mishnah means when it says, Noichlim v'loy manchilim. Ha'isha espanel, when we speak about a woman, her sons, Visha, a woman doesn't Yarshin, a mother doesn't Yarshin from her sons, Visha Spala, a woman doesn't Yarshin her husband, Vachaya Aim, the brothers of the mother, all of these are situations, Manchilim Veloy Naichlim. You are their Yarshim, but they are never your Yarshim. Vachman Aim, brothers who only have the same mother, but do not have the same father, and as the Rishonim explained, what the Mishnah is teaching us is that Mishpachas Av Kruya Mishpacha, only the paternal family is considered family, maternal family is not considered family. However, there's a very fundamental debate amongst the Rishonim. What does the halacha mean when it says Mishpachas Aim Loi Kruya Mishpacha? Does it mean that a maternal family is halachically not considered family? Or does it mean that compared to paternal family, maternal family are not considered family? However, certainly it is considered family to some degree. Where will there be a nafkamina? So I saw two nafkaminas la halacha. One nafkamina is as follows. What would be the halacha if a woman, a non-Jewish woman, while she was pregnant, was Megayer, and she has a child? So that child and the mother, they're both Gerim, and they're both considered relatives of each other. The father, whether he was or wasn't Megayer, let's make it simple case that the father was not Megayer. So there is no halachic relationship between this individual and his biological father. So the halacha is, now the question is, when this person passes away, this geir, this child passes away, will his mother be his yoyrish? Let's say his mother's still alive. If we say that the halacha mishpachas aim loy krui mishpacha teaches us that maternal relatives are not relatives at all, and this individual only has maternal relatives, paternally he has no relatives, he's a geir, he will be like any other ger that the halacha is, we discussed earlier in our Masechta, that if a ger passes away, anybody, the first one to get hold of his assets will be his yoyush. However, if we say that, what does it mean that mishpacha same ain't a kuri mishpacha? It's only when we compare it to a paternal family. But if there's no paternal family, certainly the maternal family is considered family, then she will be, then he will be, she will yashin the son. Another nafkamina lalocha is that the Torah teaches us that if a person sells himself as a slave, there's a din that his relatives have to try to redeem him from slavery. Certainly, the halacha teaches us that his paternal relatives have that first obligation. But what will be the halacha if he doesn't have any paternal relatives? Or his paternal relatives don't have the resources to be able to redeem him? Will there be an obligation on his maternal relatives to redeem him? If we say mishpachas aim ena kuri mishpacha, that halachically it's not considered family, then they have no greater obligation to redeem him than any other Jew. However, if we say the mishpachas aim ena kuri mishpacha means only in comparison to his father's family, but certainly they are considered family, then the halacha would be that they would have to redeem him in a situation where the paternal family can't do it. Ask the Gemara, Mashna the Ketaniu Aves Abanim Bereisha. Ask the Gemara, when our Mishnah begins discussing and explaining the case of Yesh Noichlim Umanchilim, it speaks about a case where a son Rachman Tzlan passed away, and his father yashins him. Ask the Gemara, why is that the case that the Mishnah speaks about first? Listen, the Abanim is Abereisha. Shouldn't the Gemara has spoken about a case where a father passes away and the son yashins the father? And the Gemara explains why it seems that that should be the case that the Mishnah begins with. Chada, the schule b'purnasu lai maschilinen. To begin the parak, this whole sugya, speaking about a case which represents Puronius. And as the Rishonim, as the Rashbam explains, it actually represents a double Puronius. Number one, it represents a situation where someone passed away without children. Because if somebody has children, as we learned, his children yarshin him. And it also represents a situation that a child passed away before his father passed away, which is also a terrible tzara. Void. And furthermore, shouldn't our Mishnah refer to the case that the Torah speaks about, k'siv ish kiyomus uben eloy, that the Torah speaks about a case which is the normal way it works typically in the world, that a son yashins from his father. So the Gemara here clearly indicates that a son predeceasing a father is considered a Puronius. In fact, it's interesting to note, the Shulchan Aruch says that if someone passes away and he has one son, and his son now will be his Yoyrish, the son should make a bracha Dayan Emes, his father passed away, but he should also make a bracha Shechianu, because now he gets the Yerush of his father. If there are a number of sons who will be yashining the father, they make the Dayan Emes, and they write the bracha Toiva Meitiv. Even though, as many Paiskim indicate, it's not our minig to make this bracha, some Paiskim want to distinguish between a situation between the father died when he was an older person, died, that's the way it is in the world that older people pass away, versus where if the father passed away when he was younger. Still, clearly, the Paiskim indicate that, says Rabbi Kivega, that if there's a situation where a son died and the father is yarshining the son, there everybody agrees that the father should only make the bracha of dayin or emes, and he should not make the bracha of shechiyanu. Because how can one make a bracha shechiyanu when his son passed away before him, and Al-Gamar clearly called it a peronius? There's an interesting Ratvaz. The Ratvaz points out that the Rambam, many times when he mentions different mitzvahs asay in his Sefer Mishneh Torah, he first introduces the subject that he's going to discuss, saying this is the mitzvah asay, and then he goes on to describe what the mitzvah asay is. But the Ratvaz points out, when the Rambam begins discussing Hilchos Gerushin, the Rambam doesn't begin by saying there's a mitzvah to say that if a husband wants to terminate his marriage with his wife, he should write her a get. Rather, he begins right away, Ein Isha Miskareshes El B'Ksav. What is the Rambam trying to teach us, says the Ratvaz? The Rambam's again saying he doesn't want to begin with a peronius, and beginning by saying the mitzvah to say to divorce, which certainly represents a peronius, the Rambam doesn't want to begin his sefer, that section with. So now the question again is, why did the Mishnah choose to begin with a case where his father is yarshining his son? V'tana, I did the aslim midrasha. Since this halacha, that a father yarshens a son, is something that we learn from midrasha, chavivalei, it has a chavivus, it's particularly something that the Tana wants to speak about, and that's why he mentions it first. Of course, the Rishonim, the Mefarshim point out that just because something we learn from a drasha has to have the same halachic status as something that's mentioned explicitly in the Torah. Otherwise, the Tana would not mention a drasha first. But here, indeed, say the Mefarshim, we're dealing with a situation that the din that a son yashins a father and a father yashins a son is equal. But the Mefarshim asked the obvious question. So before we go further, why something that's learned from a drasha has such a chshivas? So I saw two pshatim. The Sham Tzion Balacha suggests, because something that's learned from a drasha is typically a chiddush, and something that's a chiddush is chaviv, is particularly choshiv to the Tana. Rav Shach, I saw from Rav Shach a different pshat, a beautiful pshat. Something that's explicit in the Torah, so I don't have to work hard to understand. I have to learn the Pasuk of Chumash, and if I learn the Pasuk of Chumash, I'll understand what the Torah is teaching us. Whereas something that's learned from a drasha, I had to be meyageya, I had to work on understanding. And since I had to work on understanding it, it has a particular chavivus, and that's why the Tana mentioned it first. But as to Mefarshim, the Gemara really hasn't addressed the basic issue. Because the basic issue here is that we want to avoid speaking about Peronius. We know when it comes to Kriyas HaTorah, the minig is that we always call up to the Torah first. We don't begin reading from something which is a Peronius. We begin only reading from something which represents good news. So why here do we begin? Does the Tana not bothered? Is the Tana not bothered by beginning with something which is Peronius? So some answer, because the Mishnah began with a situation with the words Yesh Noichlim Umanchilim. And the case of Noichlim Umanchilim is the simple case is that the son yarshens from the father, which is the normal case, and that's the first words of our Mishnah. And since they're the first words of our Mishnah began with the normal course. So even though later on in the Mishnah, when the Mishnah begins to explain the case, it begins with a peronius, it doesn't bother us that much, because the Mishnah already began with a positive situation, the situation of Noichlim, that a son yashins from a father. But I saw another pshat that the Chassidish Sfarim suggests. The Chassidish Sfarim suggests that absolutely, the Mishnah is referring to a situation which is a terrible situation, that a son, Rachmanu Litzlan, dies without children and his father yarshens him. It's a peronius. But the Mishnah is also teaching us the power of Aydi di osim midrasha chavivalei. You know how you could avoid Puranius, teaches us the Mishnah? You know how you could avoid such a terrible situation that Rachman al-Tzlan, a son dies without children and his father has to yashin him? Asi Madrasha. Sit and learn Torah. If you sit and learn Torah, the Torah will be megan. The Torah will protect us from all kind of tzaras. Ask the Gemara, or my drasha, where do we find the drasha that teaches us? What is the drasha that the Gemara is referring to that teaches us that the father yashins the son? The Tanya. Because the pasuk says, She'eroi. The pasuk says that the She'eroi should be his Yairish. Sa'av. And that comes to teach us, Melamed, the pasuk is teaching us, Sha'av Koidim La'achim. That the father comes before everybody else. Ask the Ramban, why from all the other cases of Yerusha does the Torah teach us explicitly who is the Yairish? And here the Torah only mentions it by saying the word She'eroi, which we're going to spend the next couple of Shurim trying to understand who She'eroi is. Why shouldn't the Torah say Aviv? So again, says the Ramban, along the same line what we've been learning, because a situation where a father should yashin a son, should inherit from a son, represents a terrible situation, and the Torah did not want to speak about it explicitly, and that's why the Torah only says it indirectly, She'eroi Zo'av. Lamed Sho'av Kodem L'Achim. Yochel Ye Kodem L'Ben. We would think that not only does a father come before the deceased brothers in being his Yairish, but perhaps he should even come before a son. Tamaloyma HaKarev. Karev, Karev Kodem. When we speak about Yerusha, we always speak about the closer relative coming first, and the son is considered obviously closer than a father. It's interesting to note that the Kli Chemda says that even though the Torah is teaching us that a father, that a karav kaidim, that the closer relative comes first, that only is by Jews, not by non-Jews. Because remember, the Torah teaches us that v'yoyma Avram, Avram says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hein li lo nusata zera vin ben beis yorish oisi. Avram was saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I have no children, and therefore when I will pass away, my Eved Eliezer will be my Yorish. And the question is, why will it be Eliezer will be his Yorish? Although Avram Nebuch didn't have any children, he had other relatives. And we're learning now in the Gemara, HaKarv Karv Kaidim, the closer relatives are his Yarshim, and the relatives certainly are closer than the Eved. Therefore says the Kli Chemda, this thing of HaKarv Karv Kaidim is only by Jews. Avram was a Ben Noach, his relatives were certainly not Jewish, and the din of HaKarv Karv Kaidim would not be applicable. Ask the Gemara, Omari Isa, L'rabbis es ha-ben. Why do you say that the son comes first son, then father, then brother? Maybe we should say that somebody's primary Yorish is his brother. Answers the Gemara. Ma'ben is ha-ben. It makes sense to say that the son comes first. Shekein kom tachas aviv liyadoi. There's a din of yud. That means if somebody has a omma havriya, a Jewish maid servant, he has a right to marry her, and he doesn't have to give her new kesef kedushin. Rather, the money that he used to purchase her becomes the kesef kedushin. Says the same din is regarding a son. That if somebody's son wants to marry his father's Omer Havriya, he doesn't have to use new Kesef Kedushin. Rather, the money that the father used to buy her will be the Kesef Kedushin. But that is a din that's limited to a son. So that's what the Gemara says. Mar ben is a ben. It makes sense to say the son comes first. Shekein kom tachas aviv liyadoi. Now, there's a very fundamental machlokes Rishonim. When the Gemara here says that the father should have come first, who does the Gemara mean? Does it mean that the father will come before the son, but not before the brother? And that, or does the Taisa says that, and therefore the according to this, the order would be father, brother, son? Taisa says that the order would be father, son, brother. And according to Taisus, the Gemara's question is, now, maybe this brother should come before the son and before the father. And says the Gemara, no, that the son comes first, because the son has the din that he of Yehud that's strictly set to a son, will stay achuza. The Torah says that if somebody is magdish, stay achuza, it remains by the hegdish until Yovel. During that time, hegdish could sell it. However, there's a very big nafkamina who buys it from Hegdish. If the original owner buys it back from Hegdish before Yovel, he retains that property even after Yovel. If, however, it was someone else who redeemed it, the halacha will be that when Yovel comes, it goes to the Kahanim. Here teaches us the Gemara that if someone's son has the same status as the father, and just like as we learned now, that if the father is paid it, it doesn't go to the Kohanim by Yovel, so too will the din by his son. So from here we see the power of the son. And that's why the Gemara says that certainly a son comes as a Yairish before a brother. Ask the Gemara, Adrabba, Marba Nisach, we can make an argument that a son, brother comes first. She can come tachas achiv liyibim. The halacha is if somebody dies without children, his brothers are miyabim his wife. So we see that the brother goes, has this power. Answers the Gemara, klum yesh yibim el makom shein ben. When is yibim conducted? Yibim is only conducted when there is no son. Hava makom sheyesh ben. If there's a son, ain yibim. So we see that yibim is stronger than, so we see that a son is stronger than a brother. Says the Gemara. Why does the Gemara have to go through this back and forth, ask the Gemara, Shak Vatarya, to prove that a son is stronger than a brother? Tamad Ikai Pircha, is it only because of this reason that we say the son is stronger? Halav Hachi, if not for this reason, Havamina Ach Adif, could we indeed think that his brother is stronger than a son? Typically, we could certainly say Dachatarti Vachachada. We could say that a son is stronger than a father, than a brother, because he has two reasons. He has the power of Yehud, and he also has the din of Steyachuza. So even if we'll suggest that a brother has strength because of Yibum, that shouldn't be enough to make a brother go before a son, because a brother will only have one reason, and a son will have two reasons. Answers the Gemara. Steyachuza guf mahay tamu dekaim leilatana. How do we know that a son has the same status as the father regarding the steyachuza? Only because we learn klum yesh yibum ab makom shein ben. Does yibum ever perform when there is a son? Hayesh ben in yibum. If there's a son, there's no yibum. That's why we know the halacha of yiud. So in other words, says the Gemara, that's why we know the halacha of steyachuza. So in other words, what the Gemara is saying is that steyachuza is not to be understood as an independent reason why a son is stronger than a brother, but it all stems from the halacha of yibum. And therefore, since it stems from the halacha of yibum, that's why we can't use it as an independent reason of showing strength of a son over a brother. So here we have a machlokes rishonim, how to understand the maskana of the Gemara. Some explain the maskana of the Gemara is that now a son has two reasons to be stronger than a brother, Yibum and Yehud. Others explain that what the Gemara is teaching us with the concept of Yibum is a much deeper concept. And the Gemara is teaching us is that Yibum teaches us that a son is an extension of his father. And that's why as long as there is a son, there is no din of Yibum, And if there are no sons, Rachmanslan, there is a din of Yibam. So we don't anymore have to compare who has more qualities, who has more characteristics, who has less characteristics. Rather, the way to look at it is that Yibam proves the strength of the relationship between a father and a son. It's also interesting to note that the Mefarshim point out that why didn't the Gemara use another example of showing the special relationship that exists between a father and a son? And that is that the son not only inherits the father's financial assets, but he also takes over his father's position, whether it's a rabbanus or any other position. Say some of Farshim, the fact that the Gemara avoids giving that explanation is a raya that midaraisa, there is no halacha that a son automatically assumes his father's positions. And that's why the Gemara cannot suggest this as an argument to show the strength of a son.